Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Clay Travis is without Kick the Coverage and Fox Sports Radio. Clay, first off, congrats on your new deal with Fox Sports Radio. That's awesome news.
Yeah, thanks. Jason Martin had a big part in that, too. I know he's now at his own, but we had a pretty good two-year run. So I'm signed up for three more, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, Jason Martin was really against this interview today. He said, I just don't know if I can handle Clay again after leaving. So
yeah, I know.
He'll get through it, I'm sure.
He had 15 hours a week for a long time, so I think he can handle 15 more minutes.
Clay, you sent out a tweet about 40 minutes ago, and you said, I'm solving the NFL anthem issue in one tweet. NFL and owners, we agree to stop testing for marijuana because we believe arrest and criminalization of weed discriminates against minority communities. Players, we agree to stand for the anthem. Boom. Let's all play football. I think this is pretty brilliant. How long have you been thinking about this, or did this just pop in your head about an hour ago?
We may have talked about it on the show before. Jason may remember a little bit. Now that the NFL and the NFL Players Association are talking and trying to come to a resolution, I enjoy trying to get into disputes and debates and try to get them solved, as opposed to being kind of dogmatic and saying, oh, my side has to triumph in all ways. And for people who might have listened to me back in the day on 3HL, I have long felt that drug testing in sports for non-performance enhancing drugs is ridiculous. Like, and in particular, drug testing for weed, which is the lowest level drug that they test for, given that it's now legal in very many of the states that NFL players play in, where the franchises are located. And look, I came out in favor of a bill in Tennessee that would have legalized the medicinal marijuana. I don't have a problem with consenting adults who believe either for in their leisure or because it helps them with, whether it's chemo or whether it's some sort of glaucoma or whatever you have. If marijuana makes you better able to handle the pain of an illness, or if you just want to pop a few gummy bears in your spare time and have a little bit of a high that way, I don't think that's bad. You know, I drink alcohol. I think probably weed overall is less problematic in terms of its impact in a community than alcohol is. So I think this solves two issues, and let me explain why I think it would potentially be a resolution. One, you have a majority white old guy ownership in the NFL, right? This allows them to say, hey, we think that the criminalization of marijuana disproportionately impacts minority communities. The NFL, by and large, is made up of minority football players. We believe that that we are sending an important message to society about the decriminalization of marijuana. We're not saying you should use it. We're just saying we don't think that our tax dollars and our police and everybody else should be spent trying to catch a guy smoking a joint, and we are now showing that in our own actions by not testing for it. Simultaneously, for players who have been protesting the unequal treatment of minority communities by protesting the national anthem, which I think is bad for the overall NFL business, this is a nod in their direction that the NFL owners care. It's also a direct, tangible benefit of their protest that allows them to then feel like, okay, our bosses are listening to us. We have received something. Our protest has not been entirely in vain. And more importantly, it just ends the loggerhead moment, right? This players going up against the owners, the fans losing out, Jarrell Casey coming out and saying he's going to continue to protest. This is all awful for the NFL. And so this is a big part of my book that's coming out in September. I've spent a lot of time talking about it. I just think in one fell swoop, it could solve everything and get us back to being able to talk about football instead of who stood and who stayed in the locker room and who raised their fist and all this other absurdity that goes on surrounding the national anthem right now.
You know, I think in the end, with this story happening late yesterday afternoon with the Dolphins and then the league coming back and saying we're going to reset with the Players Association and the league on the ruling for player protest, this kind of helps take the attention away from Jarrell Casey, who, let's face it, Clay, in Nashville, Tennessee, with a lot of people who go to the Titans games, was not a very popular guy for what he said in London.
Well, look, I think, and let me take a step back here too, because a lot of people who write and talk about this issue are not very smart. I know this for a fact, okay? The NFL television partners, that's Fox, NBC, CBS, and ESPN, missed their revenue projections this past year by $600 million because television ratings were down so substantially in the NFL. That's an untenable business proposition. Over the last 2 years, the ratings are down nearly 20%. And the television dollars are pegged for years in advance, so the players aren't seeing a tangible impact of this so far. But eventually, if this continues, they will, and they'll all make less money. I guarantee you, the Titans won't tell you, but I guarantee you their ticket sales and revenue for sponsorship have been down over the past 2 years, and I bet they attribute a substantial portion of that to the anthem protest. I'll tell you this right now. I'm a season ticket holder. The Titans have been offering for lots of season ticket holders to get much better seats that have been abandoned by PSL holders without even having to buy a PSL. There was a time where you could not get season tickets at the Titans. That time has since passed, and they are scrambling. And I think, look, you look around the Titans stadium, there are a lot of open seats, and many of those seats, I believe, are those red seats where people are paying the most to go to the games. And so I think what the players don't understand, I remember Delanie Walker came out and said, well, if you don't like it, don't come to the games. Well, wait a minute. Do you understand that's how you get paid? Like, you don't hear somebody who's making blue jeans be like, hey, if you don't like my blue jeans, go buy them. Like, most people who are in a business where they sell to the masses do everything they can to avoid alienating people who buy their product because they understand that's how they get paid and where their business comes from. I think a lot of NFL players don't understand that it is the fans who pay their salary, the fans who watch the games, the fans who are marketed to by advertisers, the fans who buy tickets and buy their jerseys and pay $9 for a beer. All of those people are giving you their money, and you get to put it in your pocket because of what you do. That money is changing hands. And if you tell any segment of the audience that's paying money for your product, hey, I don't care about you anymore, don't come back here if you don't like it, that's incredibly stupid from a business perspective.
Clay, leave it to me leaving for a month, and then you say something that I have to painfully agree with. Your tweet is brilliant. It truly is. Like, it's not going to happen, but it's brilliant. It makes sense on every conceivable level. I look at this and I say to myself, if you're going to go reset this, one, you realize you botched it again, which we knew as soon as this rule came out, it wasn't going to work. Doesn't it seem like what we're going to get, and this is not going to be enough, and you've said this before, it's not going to be enough for the people that are already ingrained against the players because of the way this has gone down. But don't you look at it and say now, they're probably going to come back and say, we're just going to stay in the locker room. Do you feel like that's probably going to be the compromise that's also not going to be enough?
You think the NFL, the rule is going to be that nobody comes out for the anthem?
I think that might be.
And we're talking about them reverting to, yes. You know, before pre-9/11, they started standing for the national anthem after 9/11. Before that, the pregame festivities took place, then the players ran out. It's the same way in college football. You go to a UT game, they're never out there for the national anthem. They run through the tee after that.
Yeah, but that is going to be insanely ugly if they go that direction.
Right.
Because then it's going to be – I don't think they can go that direction. I think once they made the decision to come out for the national anthem, if you announce, hey, nobody's coming out for the national anthem now, then I think the people who are aggrieved are going to be even more aggrieved because instead of whatever it is, 20 guys who are creating an issue for the entire league, you're not going to have 1,500 players on the field. And then I think, by the way, you'll get a lot of other players saying, hey, I do think we should be out there for the national anthem. So it just continues to create it. I think what they should have done from the get-go, frankly, and I said this, is you have an obligation under your contract to fulfill the requirements of your job. One of those is to stand for the national anthem because the NFL has made the decision that they want to completely embed themselves with the flag, with the military, with patriotism in general. They want those two things to be synonymous. It's why we have flyovers before games, right? You may not agree with it, But the business owners of the NFL have decided that is very good for NFL business. Much like, let's be honest, being against breast cancer is good for NFL business. It's not like the NFL is like, hey, we want to solve breast cancer. If the NFL put every dollar that they made for a few years into breast cancer, they probably could go a long way towards ending breast cancer. What they want to do is get credit for being against breast cancer without actually doing that much, right? Oh, we're going to play in pink cleats. We're going to have pink towels. Oh, the NFL hates breast cancer. What is that doing? That's helping the NFL grow their audience by appealing to women who might not otherwise be inclined to like the NFL, right? Like, I don't want to be a total cynic here, but when you are a business, your business is predicated on making as much money as possible. You know, the reason why the Zone has advertising breaks is not because you guys need to rest your voice. It's because that's how they make money, right? I mean, you get to listen to radio for free, and in exchange, advertisers get to talk to you and try to persuade you to buy their product. That's the way the business works. They could charge you directly to listen to radio, and then there would be no advertising, but then you would have to pay your dollars out. So, right, like, understanding how business works is a big part of this. And so I think the business would be hurt by that decision. I don't think that would be a good solution. I think Donald Trump would even hammer that even more. So I don't think they can go in that direction, which is why I like my idea. A compromise, this is to me a good compromise because it doesn't actually hurt anybody. It eliminates what I think is a part of the NFL rules that have never made sense to me. By the way, if you're an owner, why would you want one of your best players not to play because he smoked pot in his free time? Like, that's insane to me. I understand if you don't want one of your best players to be, like, using heroin or using something where they could die or, you know, severely diminish their ability to play the sport. But I'm not of the opinion that smoking pot, it's a performance, you know, not enhancing drug. In other words, you're worse when you do it. But I don't think if I had to choose between whether my team was filled with potheads or filled with alcoholics, I'd probably choose potheads because I think you have to smoke pot less than you drink.
Clay, you were down at SEC Media Days. I thought Jeremy Pruitt, I had very low expectations for Jeremy Pruitt going in. I thought he was really good. I thought he sort of won the day at SEC Media Days and handled some criticism from some former Georgia players really well. What was your take on Jeremy Pruitt in Atlanta?
I don't think anything that is said at SEC Media Days has any impact whatsoever. I mean, the more time I've seen coaches show up and like, oh, wow, that coach was amazing. He was so entertaining. And I haven't ever been able to see a correspondence between whether you're good at SEC Media Days and whether you actually win games. So I didn't even think what was said about Jeremy Pruitt was that egregious of a thing to say. I mean, I think before you've been a head coach, it's completely legitimate for people to ask whether or not you have the skills to be able to be a head coach. I mean, I don't even understand how that's remotely controversial. Like, look, if you haven't done a job before and now you have a job that you've never done before, I think certainly there are lots of people out there who could say, hey, I don't think that guy's going to be very good at that job before.
But let me ask you this, though, Clay. I agree with you. It's fair to ask that question. But what does it matter if Jeremy Pruitt, who coached 8 years under Nick Saban successfully, and was respectful enough to Nick Saban, maybe the greatest college football coach of all time. I guess my question then would be, what does it matter if he was disrespectful to Mark Richt in terms of his value as a head coach now that he's the boss of everyone else? I don't know how that factors in. If you want to say Jeremy Pruitt's really dumb, if you're Aaron Murray, I don't think he can be a CEO, then you can say that. But using the excuse of, well, he was really disrespectful to the guy who recruited me, and I don't like him for that reason. So for that reason, I don't know that he could be a good head coach. I don't see the connection there now that he's actually the boss of everyone in that program.
Well, I think the argument would be that he lacks interpersonal skills and that now when you're a head coach, you have to spend a lot more time on interpersonal skills. Now, I think if you win, the interpersonal skills don't matter, right? I mean, Nick Saban, a great story that I've told before, but Nick Saban, when he first took over the job at Alabama, was on a junket with big-time Alabama boosters, and they were all on a private plane flying somewhere to go speak. And all those guys were on the plane. They broke out the whiskey. They were hoping that Saban was going to sit around and tell them stories and everything else and regale them and entertain them. And Saban got on the plane, said hi, sat down, put on his headset, and started watching film on his laptop. Never spoke to them again the whole rest of the flight. All right? And those guys were like, man, this guy's an ass. But you know what those guys want to do? They want to beat Auburn. They want to beat LSU. Ultimately, whether or not the coach is a guy who wants to sit around and drink whiskey and tell them stories doesn't matter if you win. Now, if you don't win and you're a jerk, you get fired faster. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, I think you can get an extra year by just being a nice guy because people are like, hey, I like this guy. Let's keep him around. We'll give him one more year. But ultimately, I think in this job, all that matters is whether you win or lose. If you win, the money follows you. You know, it's like people are like, oh, this guy's not a very good fundraiser. And then he gets the nomination to run for president. And then guess what happens? He or she suddenly raises hundreds of millions of dollars. Do you know why? Because everybody's like, well, maybe this guy's going to be president. I want to make sure that I've gotten his good graces. And so I think that kind of discussion in general, I mean, I think it's valid. Like, do you think a guy has the skill set to be able to be a good coach? I think you can talk about it, but ultimately having a good personality doesn't keep you the job. Beating Florida does. You know, Butch Jones, I think personally was liked by a lot of guys. But you know, when he was on the sideline and he didn't go for two in 2015 against Florida, I think a lot of people said, well, you know, man, he's a nice guy, but he's an idiot. And when he's on the field, and I think ultimately all that matters is wins and losses. I mean, I think you can see that with so many coaches across the country. We spend a lot of time talking about what kind of personality they have, and I think that can matter for recruiting. I think it can matter in that regard. And so that's a, you know, somewhat valid perspective. But in terms of anything else, I thought that whole story was really kind of strange. Like, that it was a big story to begin with, I think, was a function of the fact that nobody was saying very much at all. And secondly, I thought Pruitt's response was fine. You know, 15 years ago, I was a kindergarten teacher, but all he could have also just said, look, if I win, nobody's going to talk about my personality. If I lose, everybody's going to say my personality sucks. Guess what? I'm focused on winning.
Well, and
I think that's true.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And something else that I think has been a really undercovered story, and Derek Mason hit on this yesterday, the need for a new stadium at Vanderbilt. I don't know how, if you're David Williams at Vanderbilt, you can accept that large of a check every year from the SEC network and not at least have a plan for a new stadium when your stadium is far and away the worst in the SEC.
Oh,
if you're
going
to receive that much money, I don't, to me, that is athletic department malpractice. And now you've got Derek Mason, a coach who has not been successful, sitting there saying, yes, absolutely, we need a new stadium.
Well, that's because the plans are done. I mean, I don't know if that's ever been public, but they have all the plans done for a new stadium at Vanderbilt. And like, for instance, one of the details that's really cool is they would flip the side. They need more luxury.
Well, are they going to do it? I mean, is this like an architect's blueprint drawing, or are they actually going to put the stadium in?
I mean, I think the challenge is getting the real money behind it. I mean, I think what Vanderbilt would want is they want the big donors to be like, hey, we're going to put up several hundred million dollars towards building and rehabbing the stadium. I know, for instance, one thing they talked about doing was putting a whole new area of luxury suites on the other side of the field from where the press box is, because obviously Vanderbilt has a lot of wealthy donors, and I think it's at a bare minimum, the Vanderbilt donor experience is total crap in that stadium. And one of the things they had talked about doing, which I think is brilliant, was putting the brand new luxury suites up on the other side of the stadium and having them double facing so you could watch football games in one time of the year, and then the other time of the year you could walk to the other side and look out over the baseball stadium, which would be amazing.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea. Now, is this a brand new stadium or renovations they're talking about to the current stadium?
I don't know about whether it was. I think it was just working to, like, I mean, with that stadium, I think you would have to spend several hundred million dollars minimum.
Oh, to easy. Back up.
But I think the other thing that you know, obviously they got into the discussion was, I think the MLS talk kind of mixed things up, because there was a lot of talk of moving Vanderbilt's games all to this MLS stadium, and then people said, hey, we don't want to leave campus. Here's what I would say. Here's what I would say would be an amazing solution is if Nashville in the state of Tennessee really got behind the idea of getting a Major League Baseball team, I think what would be amazing to see is for Vanderbilt to say, we will put the Major League Baseball stadium on our campus. We will use that as our Vanderbilt baseball field, and we will also use it as our football stadium. It will seat 35,000 people, and it will be an incredible state-of-the-art facility. We'll tear down the existing, you know, football stadium and other things that we have, the baseball stadium there, and we'll put it in the parking lot over off West End, you know, across the street from Dudley Field, where it is now. That's, again, I'm in the business today of making the world a better place and just trying to create compromises. That, to me, seems like it would be a pretty amazing kind of solution, because then Vanderbilt could get a state-of-the-art stadium. The state of Tennessee could come in and be involved in giving some kind of, you know, mortgage-backed bonds and everything else, low rates. And then we get a brand-new Vanderbilt baseball stadium. We get a Major League Baseball stadium. And we would get a brand new Vanderbilt football stadium all right there.
I mean, look, look, my solution is, and I've said this for years, make your stadium the Camden Indoor of football. Make it smaller, make it 28, 30,000 people, but really nice. Brick facade, great area for your donors there. And you're Vanderbilt. You've got the biggest endowment in the SEC. Just go spend the money and pay for it at this point. Well, what are we talking about trying to get the money together? The money's there if they wanted to do this.
Well, I mean, again, I think the money is there, but the Vanderbilt's position would be, and as an alum, I would say this, like, the reason why people decide to come to Vanderbilt is not to watch football games. They come to Vanderbilt because the law school is one of the top 15 in the nation, because the medical school is incredible.
I agree, Clay, but you got to give them a reason to want to come and watch football games. That to me, that's a defeatist attitude.
But what I'm saying, what I'm saying is the university at Vanderbilt is going to continue to dominate and be successful for hundreds of years, regardless of what the football team does. Now, if you've got a James Franklin who is there and you find the right coach who's willing to stay forever, I think the challenge they have is, I don't know that the donors are behind Derek Mason like they were behind James Franklin. I think if Franklin had stayed, then I think a lot of this stuff would have gotten done. But look at the stadium right now. I don't think people are refusing to come to Vanderbilt because the stadium is bad. I think they're refusing to come to Vanderbilt because the product is bad. So in order to build a new stadium, to me, it's a little bit of the cart and the horse, but if you build a great new stadium, does it really make sense if 80% of the people coming into the great new stadium are visiting fans? The reason why Vanderbilt fans are not showing up is, one, there's not very many of them. All right, let's start there. Two, it's because the product on the field is crap. Do you want to take your kids there and watch them lose? No, what James Franklin had when he left was momentum, right? He had convinced Vanderbilt fans that what had happened for the previous 70 years didn't have to happen for the next 70 years. And so it happened to the donors. They had come off their wallets. They were all there. If you spend several hundred million dollars to invest in a brand new football stadium and you open it, and in week three there's 17,000 people there to watch Vanderbilt play against Western Kentucky or Austin Peay, or not to take a shot at MTSU or any of those places, but like, that's not a solution that makes sense. Then you're sitting there saying, hey, we could have spent this $200 million building out an incredible brand new science department where we're going to be able to end a new strain of cancer because we've got all this money that we're pouring into research. And so, again, I think almost in everything, in order to spend money, you have to show me that I'm going to make
play.
Money.
I think we can end it with this. We're both anti-cancer. That's for sure.
Nobody hates cancer more than me.
Yes, absolutely. Clay Travis, Outkick the Coverage. We're up against the break. But Clay, appreciate you coming on, man. Really, really, always fun.
Hey, appreciate it. Hi, J-Mart. I'll see y'all.